Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I want to use this hour, as I had promised, to contrast the statements that created the myth of Christianity from Yosha's statements. It is absolutely evident when one reads the history of Rome, out of which the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches arose, out of which Christianity as a religion arose, that there was an overwhelming and deep-seated, both in the Roman community and the Greek community, seated desire to demean and hate Jews and everything associated with them, including their God, their Torah, their calendar, their land. And that Romans and Greeks, combining together, created a Greek name for Yosha. Now, he couldn't have a Roman name. He had to have a Greek name. They called him Jesus. Sounded very much like Zeus. So why not? Actually, they called him Iesus because they didn't even have a J. But again, even more like Zeus. But give him a Greek name. Give him a Greek title. Why not? Let's make him Greek. Let's then create him in the image of Gnosticism. Better yet, why don't we recreate his life so rather than being the living embodiment of the Torah, rather than having a name that conveys the fact that he's associated with Yahweh, I got a great idea. After naming him with a Greek name and giving him a Greek title, let's base his recreated life after Dionysus, the really handsome Greek god, the son of the sun. The God that represents everything we're trying to accomplish with his New Testament, where all of his feasts are just perfect. We can celebrate his Holy Week and call it Easter. We'll celebrate his birthday. We'll call it Christmas. Let's recast him after we've named him Jesus Christ, Iesus Christus. Let's market him in the image of Dionysus. It'll be perfect. The Romans will love him because they worship Bacchus as well as Dionysus. Yeah, Hadrian himself, the great Jew hater and murderer. He was an initiate into the Dionysus cult. Yes, let's remanufacture him. And then we'll call, after General Constantine creates his church, let's have the Council of Nicaea, where we declare that he's the totality of God. And we'll base a religion off of him, now that we've given him a fancy Greek name and a fancy Greek title, and we've recreated him in the image of Dionysus with the death and resurrection cult. Celebrating his birthday every year, just like we did Dionysus. It's perfect. We get rid of all that Jewish stuff. Get rid of that Torah, and we get to replace it with canon law and Roman law and Greek philosophy and Gnosticism. It's all make-believe. It was all myth. It was all promoted, too, in a patriotic environment where there was no distinction between the military and patriotism and religion. Just as you hear SRN wallow in militarism during the commercial breaks, SRN being a Christian network, wallowing in American military propaganda, it was no different during Constantine Zero when he created the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church. Nothing has changed. It's a religion based entirely on a lie. Lived, breathed, articulated, promoted, just as the lie was lived and breathed 2,000 years ago. And yet, in the first book of the so-called Christian New Testament. And one of the two books actually written by an eyewitness providing a biographical, historical portrayal of the events, we find in the opening speech of Yahusha an entirely different reality. A reality that's the antithesis of Pauline doctrine, of Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity. He said emphatically, "You should not think that I came to tear down, invalidate, or discard the Torah or the prophets." And yet that is what Christians believe. They believe exactly the opposite of what Yahusha said. They believe that their Jesus Christ, who they gave a Greek name and title to, came to do away with the Torah. Because Paul told them that. And yet, how is that possible when Yahusha begins his most important public address telling us, "You should not think that I came to invalidate the Torah"? He said the opposite of what Christians believe. How is it possible then the Christian belief system that alleges that it is based on the words and deeds of Yahusha, although they don't know his name, can think that the belief that the Torah was actually invalidated, that the Torah was actually dismissed by the very individual who said, "You should not think that"? You either have to be ignorant of what he said, or irrational, therefore, to be a Christian. Because based upon what he said, to have a relationship with him, to follow him, to know him, you also would have to be Torah observant, and the moment you're Torah observant, you cease to be a Christian. It really isn't complicated, folks. You don't have to get any further than right here to know that a third of the world's population has been brainwashed into the lie that is Christianity. This cannot be resolved. There is no solution for this if you're a Christian. There is a solution, but you have to cease being a Christian to embrace it. And that's to become Torah observant. "You should not think that I came to invalidate or to subvert the Torah or the prophets. I actually came to create a division." I actually came not to create such a division, to invalidate or to discard it, but instead to completely fulfill it. Now, for those Christians who say, "See, that's the answer. He came to fulfill it, so he fulfilled it, he did away with it." Well, that's not what fulfill means. In context, which is the only hope you ever have of understanding anything, in context, you cannot accept that position because he just said, "I did not come to invalidate it. I did not come to create this artificial division." What's the artificial division? An Old Testament versus a New Testament. There's only one testament. There's only one covenant. He says, "I did not come to bring that kind of division. I did not come to invalidate or discard the Torah. But instead, to proclaim it, to complete it, to convey it, to accomplish it." What was he accomplishing? The Torah. What was he fulfilling? The Torah. How do you know, how do you benefit from what he did on Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua if you don't understand what those things represent relative to the Torah? You can't, is the answer. Even if you were to take the position that he fulfilled it, you would have to say, what did he fulfill? What in the Torah did he fulfill? How did he become the Passover lamb? How did his soul answer the promise associated with matzah, unyeasted bread? What was the purpose of the reunification of soul and spirit on Bukurim, firstborn children? Who was enriched and how were they enriched? Who was empowered and how were they empowered on Shavua, the promise of the Shabbat? If you don't know the Torah, you haven't a clue as to what he did, as to what he was fulfilling, how or why he was doing so. And he didn't fulfill it to do away with it. He fulfilled it to honor the promise that Yahweh had made. He goes on to say, because indeed and in truth I say to you, until with absolute certainty the heaven and earth cease to exist, not even under any circumstance shall one aspect of the smallest letter, nor a single stroke of the pen, cease to be relevant from the Torah. Until with absolute certainty everything might take place. This again renders the lame, irrational, and ignorant Christian excuse that fulfill means to do away with absolutely nonsensical. Again, you have to be ignorant, which means you don't know. Or irrational, which means you're stupid to be a Christian. You know, there's far more to the fable that is Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity and Protestant Christianity than simply getting your history wrong, to being on the wrong side of the issue with God. You have to be ignorant and irrational. Yosha said that the letters which comprise the Torah, and those letters, there is only one language where there is a yod. There's only one language where the single, the strokes of the pen represent the distinguishing aspects of Hebrew letters. He's telling you that the very strokes that comprise the letters in Hebrew, that comprise the Hebrew text, that comprise the sentences and statements that are found in the Torah, that none of them, under any circumstances, not the smallest aspect of them, is going to be annulled or done away with or invalidated so long as the universe exists. We spoke of this before, but there are things that are so profoundly important that I want to underscore them. First of all, it is impossible that what Paul writes and what Christians believe to be true, that the Torah has been replaced by the gospel of grace, based upon what Yosha said. He said, so long as the heavens and earth exist, then not one aspect, not even the part of one of the Hebrew letters that comprises the Torah, will be invalidated. Therefore, the Christian claim is untrue. Now, I'm not telling you that for any other reason than there is no rational scenario where Christianity under those circumstances can be valid, because the religion claims to be based on the words and deeds of Yosha. And Yosha said that so long as the heavens and earth exist, not one aspect of one letter or even a part of a letter of the Hebrew alphabet that comprises the Torah is going to be invalidated. And yet the religion is based upon invalidating the Torah and replacing it with the mythical notion of a gospel of grace, an Old Testament with a New Testament, an Old Covenant with a New Covenant, and disassociating from the Torah. It can't be done. It is absolutely untrue when the very individual that you claim is the basis of your religion says, no, it's not possible. It's a full stop here. If you're an informed and rational person, you can no longer be a Christian. Unless you just choose to be a moron. And that's really all there is to it. At this point, you have to knowingly be an idiot. Now, if you want to be an idiot, that's your choice. But when your idiocy causes popes to do what Francis did, then I'm going to hold you accountable and say, you know, it's not a victimless crime. Now, there is really an interesting aspect of this that I do not want to be missed. And I have repeated this many times, and those who know Yahweh, who are part of the covenant, have embraced this. It is a profound truth for those who know Yahweh, who observe his Torah. The Torah as it is currently laid out is going to continue to be in full effect for the next 1,019 years. We're 19 years away from Yahusha's return. He's going to return as Yahweh, and where he's going to reestablish the earth as it was in the Garden of Eden and rid it of all traces of religion, politics, economic schemes, and militarism. They'll be gone in an instant, and the earth is going to be just like the Garden of Eden for those who survive. During that time, the Torah will be in full effect. But then at the end of that millennial celebration of Sukkah, of camping out with God, he's going to destroy this earth and this universe, and is going to create a new one with us as witnesses. Now, the insights into that are profound. And the reason he's going to do it is that empowered as light, as we become spiritual beings, we now can maneuver in time. And if we can maneuver in time and see our own past and all of the hell that we have unleashed, if we could go back and view the birth of Christianity as a religion and the birth of the Empire of Rome, you'd be disgusted. It'd be incredibly sad if you could go back and witness the inhumanity that Islam has perpetrated on this planet. It would be so sorrowful. Even if you could look at your own flaws, it would be disappointing. And so God wants us to be able to explore uninhibited and examine all of the universe. But the only way for us to do that and not be saddened by some aspects of it is to create a new universe for us to explore, which is why he's going to do that in 1,019 years from now. And we could be the witnesses this time with the Big Bang and the conception of life. A marvelous time without any association with malfeasance and pain. Now, what that means is that the existing Torah and every stroke of it is valid until then. Now, what's interesting about that is that because there is no temple, because there's the ugly scar of Islam on the Temple Mount, because there really is no legacy that we can determine of the Loi, the Levites, there are vast sections of the Torah that cannot be done in the sense of doing what God says, and yet he says they're still valid. The only way they can still be valid when we cannot do them is for every aspect of every letter that comprises every instruction to teach us something profound, to teach us who Yahweh is, to help us understand what he's offering. And indeed they do. It explains what it means to observe the Torah. It explains what the Torah is, which is God's teaching. We'll be back in a moment. There's another aspect of all of this that if Christians were rational, if they were knowledgeable, they would respond to. So beyond Yahusha saying that not even the smallest fraction of the smallest letter, including the Yod, which is the letter that begins Yahweh's name. It's interesting. He chose the Yod in addition to the tittles, the strokes of the other Hebrew letters, because the Yod is the first letter in Yahweh's name. It's represented by hand reaching down and out to us. That he said that it's going to not only continue to exist so long as the heavens and earth exist, and you can look out, they most assuredly do, but that it would not be invalidated until it was completely fulfilled, every aspect of it was fulfilled. There are three of the invitations to meet with God, referred to as Mikre by Yahusha and Yahweh, that have not yet been fulfilled. Teruah, which is where the harvest of saved souls is going to occur sometime in the next 12 or 13 years. It hasn't been fulfilled yet. Yom Kippurim has not been fulfilled yet. Yahweh tells us about the Day of Reconciliations, when he's going to reconcile his covenant relationship with Yisrael and with Yehuda, reaffirming his covenant with them. That's not going to occur until year 6000 Yah, 2033 on our pagan calendars. And then the celebration of Sukkah, of the thousand year of camping out with God when the earth is returned to the Garden of Eden, that most certainly hasn't been fulfilled. And there is enormous numbers of prophecies regarding Yahweh's actually return, regarding the Magog War that precedes that, the Armageddon War that follows it, and the whole nature of the Torahless One of the Tribulation. And there's huge swaths of prophecy that have yet to be fulfilled. You know, the demise of the Syrian government, the thinning Israel at the waist. So many things have yet to happen as they have been promised, and so the Torah has to still be in effect so long as Yahusha was telling the truth. And if Yahusha wasn't telling the truth, then you can't have a religion of Christianity. And if he was telling the truth, you can't have a religion of Christianity because it conflicts in every meaningful way with what he said, what he did. Now, beyond that, just as an interesting inside for those who actually know Yahweh, when Yahweh returns, he has said that the only difference between the covenant as it exists now and the covenant as it will exist then is that he's going to write his Torah inside of us. Currently, the Torah is not written inside of any of us, which means that the covenant has not yet been renewed, which means you cannot have a new covenant in the sense of a past tense. You can't have a new testament in the sense of something that occurred 2,000 years ago because the covenant has not yet been renewed. And when it is renewed, the only difference, according to Yahweh, if you read Jeremiah 31 in context, what he says is not only is the reconciliation and the reaffirmation between Yisrael and Yahudah, not with a Christian Gentile church, but that it only differs in one way from the existing covenant. And that is that the Torah is actually written inside of us, becoming part of the fabric of our lives by Yahweh. Now you might wonder, why is he doing that then, some 19 years from now, and has not done it in the past? Why is it that none of us have the Torah written inside of us? And the answer is really very easy and yet extraordinarily profound. So long as the Torah is something you can choose to accept or reject, so long as the Torah is an external document that you can choose to embrace or to corrupt, to love or to hate, then there is free will. You have the freedom to do as Paul said, to reject the Torah. You have the freedom to do as this Pope and his church have done, which is to outlaw the Torah. Or you have the choice to embrace it. You even have the choice to ignore it, as most people do. But there will come a time where that choice is no longer appropriate, where everyone who survives Yahweh's return will be those who chose to observe the Torah, who chose to embrace the Torah, who love the Torah, and they will be the only ones who survive. And so at that point, they will all know Yahweh, and so the Torah's purpose, which is to introduce us to Yahweh, is negated. It's already been accomplished. The Torah's teaching about how we participate in the covenant will all be true, but it's no longer has any merit because everyone who survives his return will already have engaged in the Torah based upon how it's presented in its terms and conditions in the Torah. So that everyone will be a child of the covenant. You don't need instructions as to how to become a child in the covenant. Don't need instructions as to how to come to know Yahweh. We'll all know him. And the invitations to meet with Yahweh will still be celebrated, but they'll be celebrated in arrears thinking of what they accomplished, because we all will have come into the presence of Yahweh. And so there will be a time when Yahweh writes his Torah inside of us, where the Torah that we need, the teaching, the guidance that we need, is how to operate in eternity, still maintaining free will, but without doing something stupid. You know, for example, getting too close to a black hole might be lethal. I don't know. But I don't want to do something that's stupid. You know, there may be a time where Yahweh will say, yes, you can maneuver in time, but there's a period of time that I don't want you to go back to and explore because it will make you sad. And so there are all sorts of guidance that we're going to need with Yahweh when we are empowered and enriched with His Spirit that will be helpful. And that's the Torah that He's going to put inside of us. It doesn't conflict with the existing Torah. It just augments it. At a time that is different from this time. At a time we will have all made the choice of those of us who survive. It's a profound insight. And that's the beauty of being observant. When you think through what Yahweh has promised, when you analyze His every word, when you prioritize His teaching, you have the opportunity to embrace these great and profound ideas. Otherwise, you wallow around in ignorant and illogical, just wasting your life, being unaware, being illogical, living in a twisted and make-believe world. I don't want that for you. God doesn't want that for you. Value what He had to say. Study His Torah. Listen to what He Himself said. He would go on to say on this day, on His teaching on the Mount, therefore, whoever may at any time dismiss or attempt to do away with one of the smallest and least important of these prescriptions and instructions which are enjoined, and he may instruct or indoctrinate people in this manner, he will actually be provided with a name and will be legally summoned as little and lowly in the kingdom of heaven. He's saying that the Torah is essential. And if anyone were to dismiss even the smallest aspect of the Torah, that as a consequence of doing that and of teaching people that some aspect of the Torah has been dismissed, that person will be called little and lowly in the kingdom of heaven. This is precisely what Shaul did. But Shaul didn't write under his name, Shaul, which means to question him. He chose a Roman name. He was a Roman citizen. He chose the Roman name Paulos. He chose the name that means lowly and little. The man who actually perpetrated the great fraud that demeans the merit of the Torah chose the name that Yahweh said he would be called, lowly and little. And anyone, all of those Christian priests out there, all of the popes and cardinals, all of the pastors who besmirch the Torah, who say that the Torah has somehow been annulled, that it has been replaced with their New Testament, that their New Covenant, that their gospel of grace, he's saying that every one of you will be viewed as wholly insignificant in heaven. Worthless. The very people who claim to be called, to be serving God, and to be these great people in God's eyes are seen by God as being completely without merit. Because they demeaned the very instructions that enable all of us to come to know the Creator God of the universe. He would go on to say, and then whosoever might act upon it, speaking of the Torah, and teach it. That Torah is a book of teaching. This is didasko. It's the basis of disciple, one who learns from teaching, emphasizing the fact that the Torah is not laws, but teaching. They will properly be referred to and named great and important among those who reign in the heavens. Now, I'm going to tell you, I know a lot of people that teach the Torah. I know a lot of people who value the Torah. I know a lot of people who provide instruction in the Torah, which is what we're doing in this program. None of us do it to be considered important. But we all recognize that when we're doing it, we become important to Yahweh, because there's so few willing to share what the Torah actually teaches. And it's a good thing to be valued by our Heavenly Father. Because He values His children. He engages on behalf of His children. And so this is a very good position, but we do it not to achieve a claim, but to be valued by and to please our Father. And because we find it pleasing, we find it valuable to share what God shared with us, to teach His Torah, to present Yahweh's guidance so that more people might come to know Him, so that more might come to understand what He is offering through His covenant and engage in it. The more members of God's covenant family, the better. The richer the experience will be for all of us. And so we are openly exposing and condemning the stupidity of Christianity, of rabbinic Judaism, so that more people might come to know who Yahweh is and choose to engage a relationship with Him. Because you cannot come to know Him or be saved by Him while you are religious. You must cut your ties with the religion. You must cut your ties with patriotism and with politics before you will be able to walk to Him, before you will come to know Him, before you will be able to engage in a relationship with Him, before you can be saved by Him. It is the prerequisite for participating in the covenant. So we must condemn one to endorse the other. Yosha's statements, as they are presented by the eyewitness who was listening to him deliver his testimony on the Mount, Matanyahu, which means Yahweh's gift. This is recorded in Matthew 5, commencing concluding around the 19th verse, and will he returns to this exact same area, the Torah, in the 7th chapter as he continues. It's a very long presentation, what he has to say on what's considered the Sermon on the Mount. It's the instruction on the Mount. And it's unequivocal. It's wholly opposed to Christianity and Christian traditions and to Paul's letters. To discount or discard any aspect of the Torah as an individual, such as Paulos did, is contradictory to what Yahusha said. You can't have a religion based upon Yahusha's words and deeds and have it be opposed to the Torah. It's impossible. And it is irrational for anyone to claim to have been granted authorization to speak on behalf of an individual when their message is wholly contradictory to that individual. So it's the reason why it's impossible for Paul's testimony to be inspired by God. Since it's the antithesis of what God said, it has to be inspired. If it is inspired, it's inspired by an adversarial spirit, which is why it's interesting that Paul admitted to be demon-possessed. If Yahusha told the truth, the notion of a Christian New Testament is torn asunder. It's a non-starter. Because Yahusha's original testimony in the Torah is still in vogue. And based upon this statement, Paul's letters, which seek to invalidate the Torah, must be discarded. But if Yahusha cannot be trusted, then nor can Paul, because he said he was speaking on behalf of a liar. In fact, if Yahusha cannot be trusted, then the whole New Testament has to be rejected because it claims to chronicle Yahusha's words and deeds. Either way, it's a lose-lose proposition for Christianity. Neither option is acceptable if you're a Christian. With regard to the religion's veracity, it actually does not matter if this statement from Yahusha's most famous and well-attended public pronouncement is valid or invalid, properly recorded or misrepresented. If this uncompromising declaration before the largest audience he would ever address, a speech chronicled by his most literate disciple, is not reliable, and if it has been conveyed in a manner that is inconsistent with what he said, then nothing in the Greek manuscripts which claim to document his words and deeds can be considered credible. It doesn't get any better than this. And if this is invalid, nothing is credible. And if Yahusha's words were accurately translated into Greek and then responsibly retained, then there is no possibility whatsoever that the Christian religion is reliable, because it is in complete and irreconcilable conflict with the words of the Torah. As a Christian, you cannot discount this statement without discounting Yahusha's testimony. And the moment that is done, everything crumbles. But on the other hand, to believe him, you now have to reject Christianity. Equally telling, especially since the prophets were included, the majority of Yahusha's prophecies, including his return and his ultimate renewal and restoration of the covenant with Yisrael and with Yahudah, have not yet occurred. The heavens and earth remain. Therefore, the Torah still stands. That's something for Christians to think about, especially considering the subject of this discussion and the individual who delivered this instruction. Therefore, as a Christian, considering this, listening to this, since you are no longer ignorant of what Yahusha said, your only options are to reject Christianity or to be irrational. And what do you suppose are the merits of believing in something which is irrational? What good is that? Since we are now undeniably aware of Yahusha's assessment of those who attempt to dismiss and discard any portion of the Torah, and that he referred to such attempts as Paulos, Paul's chosen name, how can we consider Paulos' attempt to demean and devalue the Torah favorably? In this light, how is it that he convinced the world that God had authorized him to do precisely what Yahusha just testified should not, could not be done? Said another way, is there any chance whatsoever that God inspired, even condoned and endorsed the writings of a man who invalidated his Torah, especially in view of the statement by Yahusha?